Thanks, Steve. Thank you, Dee. My name is Carrie, and I am an alcoholic, and my home group is the New Horizons Group of Beautiful Bend, Oregon, of Alcoholics Anonymous in Beautiful Bend, Oregon. And my sobriety date is March 25th, 2010. I haven't been saying that. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I don't think it's nearly as important as the fact that I am a member in good standing of a group. Where do I get that term? Wow, that sounds awfully judgmental. Member in good standing. It comes from tradition 9 from the AA Comes of Age. That's where you can find it. And tradition 9 and AA Comes of Age. And since we're on tradition 9 tonight, I will tell you that I am going to be focused more on the short form tonight, which is really weird for me, but I love the 12 traditions illustrated for the sole purpose of traditions 4 and 9. I mean, all of the other traditions are wonderful too. I'll throw number 1 in there too. All of the other traditions are wonderful too in the 12 traditions illustrated. But for me, I never understood tradition 9 until by reading all of our other literature combined, until this simple, you know, illustrated cartoon version comes out. And it's like, oh, now it makes sense. So I'm hoping that at the end of, you know, this, whatever I have, 20 minute talk tonight, maybe, who knows, maybe you'll never look at tradition 9 the same. That's my goal. We'll see if that actually happens. So for me, let's dissect the short form. If the concept 9 didn't follow tradition 9 tonight, I would be talking a little bit more about the long form of tradition 9, because it talks a little bit about leadership, rotating committees. Billy's going to be talking about leadership tonight. That's what concept 9 is. So concept 9 and tradition 9 definitely go hand in hand. I'm going to stay more on the simplicity, the simple side of things. I'm going to stay more on the short form side of things tonight. Or at least I'm going to try. We'll see where that goes. So I'm going to tell you what I first heard when I heard tradition 9 read. Okay. So first, now remember the first time I heard tradition 9 read, and I'm sure that you guys are the same, it was the short form, because that's what's read in meetings, right? So I heard in my head a lot of, like a bipolar tradition. I heard a lot of inconsistency. So I heard AA as such ought never be organized. Okay, I'm following so far, but without even a comma or a period or a breath, it contradicts itself. And it says, but we may create service boards and committees directly responsible for those they serve. I'm sorry, but what is a service board or a committee? They are organization. So what the heck? Like, this completely sounds like it's contradicting itself in the same sentence, like without even a dash, you know, like they put a dash in there for the step 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, dash, that our lives, they didn't even throw a dash in there. I'm like, how is this possible? Like, I don't understand. And so I'm really grateful that I am not a fake it till you make it kind of girl. I am a question asker. And in early sobriety, I'm sure that I was a nuisance because of that. But I would just encourage anybody to ask questions. You know, if we don't understand one of the traditions, ask questions, because if chances are maybe someone else in the room doesn't understand either, and you're helping out more than just yourself. So this is why I love the 12 traditions illustrated so much. So last week, when we ended tradition 8, we left off with this line that catapults us into tradition 9. And so at the very bottom of the 12 traditions illustrated tradition 8, the very last line before we turn the page, it says, now, wait a minute, some old timer may interrupt. What's going on here? Didn't Dr. Bob say, let's keep it simple? Because we're at a business meeting, right? And everybody's talking about substantial unanimity and, I mean, all this stuff. And it's like, wait a minute, didn't Dr. Bob, and I don't know about you guys, actually, gosh, I don't know if I could say this. For the first time, I think in my entire AA life, I don't think that we have an apathetic clock watcher in my home group right now. Normally, home groups have a couple of apathetic clock watchers, right? Who are only there at the business meeting to motion to adjourn, right? Right now, we don't have that member. We're waiting for a new member to come and fill in. So if you're, you know, we don't have that, but normally groups have those apathetic clock watchers, and they're going to be the ones to cry, let's keep it simple. We've done this business meeting for 30 minutes now. We should close, right? And didn't Dr. Bob say, let's keep it simple? Well, the next on tradition 9, going into the very first of this tradition in the illustrated, it says, well, the words, let's keep it simple, were the last Bill W. heard from his fellow founder of AA shortly before Dr. Bob's death in 1950. Aware that it, quote unquote, means our recovery program. Why I said recovery like that is because it's in italics. Bill later wrote, we need to distinguish sharply between spiritual simplicity and functional simplicity. We must, to some extent, organize to carry the message, or else face chaos. And chaos is not simplicity. So when tradition 9 speaks of AA as such, right? Like, we got to look at those two words, as such. What does that mean? And it has these things on it, the quotation marks when it says AA as such. It goes to the heart of the AA experience, to the spiritual simplicity of one alcoholic saying silently, perhaps help, and another alcoholic answering, I know how you feel. We're here to help you. Such a relationship could never be organized. So what that sounds like to me is the sharp distinction, I'm using the language out of the pamphlet, the sharp distinction between when a 12-step, somebody calls the inner group office, the central office, needing a 12-step call, and they're in some serious help, right? So that person at the inner group office, who is an organized paid employee, they call for AA as such help to somebody who's doing their 12-step work. And that person, instead of taking a clipboard to the 12-step house, so say this is me on a 12-step call. I have a clipboard in my hand. I arrive at the door. I knock on the door and they open the door and I say, hi, my name is Carrie. I am an alcoholic. It works if you work it. The first step suggests like that could never be organized, right? Because we need to use the language of the heart, one alcoholic with another. Throw away the clipboard, right? Like my usual 12-step work could never be organized. Now, the stuff that has to get done behind the scenes in order to make that 12-step work possible, now that needs a little bit of organization, right? And so, for example, we had a committee meeting today at my home group. We had a committee meeting where we talked about things that would have been quite frankly embarrassing to talk about in front of a newcomer. You know, like we talked about if we're utilizing the hand raise feature, we talked about if we have a chat chair, we talked about how to close down chat, like all of these things that help make our meetings function, right? But that's not what we would be talking about with a brand new newcomer. We had a newcomer come into our home group today, right? Before the committee meeting was our home group meeting. That newcomer needs help, right? And so after the committee meeting, someone from my home called me and they said, I'm going to call my sponsor and see if we can't get a 12-step call of the guy who came into the meeting today. And I said, I think that's a great idea. And he said, so how does that usually work? Do you? And I said, our 12-step work is not organized. I said, you talk to your sponsor and you guys go and do it, but I can't give you a script for that, right? That can't be organized. That's the language of the heart. The stuff that we have to do, you know, the committees that we have to put together, the paid employees that we have to hire, that all that stuff, our business meetings, our committee meetings, all those things are what makes our 12-step work possible. Those things can have a little bit of organization, but the actual 12-step work could never be organized. Another example of this that I'll give is, you know, the 12 steps in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the only place you can find the direction, the clear-cut directions to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, is laid out in pages 1 through 103 in the big book, right? That takes you through all 12 steps from 1 to 12. Okay. One of the biggest portions of the book, a step that has a chapter all to itself, and it's a big chapter, is the 12th step. Why is that such a big chapter? Why can't we just say, this is what you do and this is what you don't do? Well, because our 12-step work could never be organized. The 12th step, working with others, chapter 7 of our big book, says, this is what you might try, but if that doesn't work, you might try this with your prospect. And if your prospect does this, do this. And, you know, it doesn't give a format, a script, right? Because it's the language of the heart. I was in my, I was in the grocery store, and I had this, I'm trying to do my stuff. Like, I'm try real hard to not be AA all the time. And I try to take at least 5 minutes off of the AA for the day, sometimes if I can get away. And I'm in the grocery store and I'm doing my grocery shopping. And I just happened to know that a sponsee and a grand sponsee were, you know, just called out on a 12-step call. And they know how to do this. You know, my sponsee's been on 12-step calls before, and my phone starts blowing up, and I'm like, really? Like, really? And so I answer the like, and I'm talking blowing up because both of them are calling me, and then the one calls me back. And so I finally answer. I'm like, what's up? And they're like, oh my God, this woman, you know, I know we're not supposed to talk about religion to a 12-step to a new prospect, because it scares them away. And, you know, Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, they didn't talk about religion on the first business visit, but this woman is really like over the top. You know, she's talking about Jesus. So is it okay for us to talk? And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's no, I'm not going to be able to tell you how to do your 12-step work. Like, you have to discernment, you know, is the whole, there's no script that this is what can't be organized. If she's talking about Jesus Christ, that's perfectly fine. Talk to her about Jesus Christ. If she's talking, you know, like, that's fine. Go with her to wherever she's going. Listen to your prospect. There's no clear-cut rules, you know. I can't tell you, don't use the F-bomb when someone else is using the F-bomb. I'm not going to tell you, oh, it makes you more relatable to use the F-bomb when you're out there 12-stepping an 85-year-old woman who's never heard the F-bomb. Like, this is what, it can never be organized, right? You got to use discernment. And so that's what, for me, as such means. And thank gosh, thank goodness for the 12 traditions illustrated to draw such a clear picture for me between the spiritual simplicity that is our actual AA work and the functional simplicity that allows that AA work to get done. I'm going to just read something out of the 12 and 12 real quick because I love this part. On page 173, in the 12 and 12, right smack dab in the middle of that first paragraph, for those of you who are following me, I have a highlight. And it says, committees have instructed many an AA to stop working on a chronic backslider, only to be told, how I do my 12-step work is my business. That's right. You know, that's right. And this is an upside down triangle. And the groups are on the top. And that's what this ninth tradition really means. It means GSO isn't going to send out some sort of, I don't know, safety guidelines, or like GSO is not going to send out any sort of instructions for how we should handle our members coming into our group, right? Because we're at the top of the triangle. Like, each group gets to decide how to handle that stuff. We're not organized. We don't take direction from
those questions. So yeah, we're going to go into concept 9. Thank you, with Billy N. From our very own Florida. Concept 9 reads, good service leaders, together with sound and appropriate methods of choosing them, are at all levels indispensable for our future functioning and safety. The primary world service leadership, once exercised by the founders of AA, must necessarily be assumed by the trustees of the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you again, Billy, for jumping in. Thank you.
Thanks, Billy Alcoholic. And I myself am on cellular, so I am going to keep my video off and be wise. I have no Wi-Fi at my new house yet. And it took me 15 minutes to realize how to turn the lights on. So, but welcome everyone. Concept nine. Dee just read it. I want to just, there's a bunch of important parts. If anyone has heard me speak before on this, you know that I believe concept nine is some of Bill W's best writing ever. And Bernard Smith. Bernard Smith was helping him write the concepts. But it goes to where, you know, Kerry was talking about the difference between as such and our structure. And in the first paragraph of concept nine, it says good leadership cannot function well in a poorly designed structure, but weak leadership can hardly function at all, even in the best of structures. But once we have created basically a sound structure, that job is finished, except for occasional refinements. In concept six, we talk about that we chose the corporate model. And anyone that has been to any kind of business school, leadership school, supervisor training, whatever, one of the tenets of that is that you could have the smartest people in the world, but if you have a bad structure, it's not going to work. So our structure has to be good and has to constantly be refined. It then goes on to say, with leadership, we have a continuous problem. Good leadership can be here today and gone tomorrow. Furnishing our structure with able and willing workers has to be a continuous activity. It is therefore a problem that in its very nature cannot be permanently solved. We must continually find the right people for our many service tasks, since our future effectiveness thus depend on ever new generations of leaders. So let's talk about that for a second. Let's go right back to business school or management school or supervisor training. The number one job of every person in a leadership position is to identify who's going to fill their place or make sure that there's a bunch of people who are maybe getting trained up. I've worked in my industry for a long time. I don't know how many years I have left. I debate that all the time with the people I report to. But I can tell you their number one question for me all the time is, Billy, who are your successors? Who's coming up behind you? And same thing in AA, except in AA, we have an added challenge, and that is rotation. In AA, we don't get to just say, hey, we'll just let so-and-so stay there forever. She's doing a great job. Let's keep her in there. No, rotation stops that. So it's our duty to constantly be looking for people. And then what does it talk about first? And I think this is so important in the third paragraph. It does not talk about trustees. It does not talk about area delegates. It doesn't even talk about DCMs. It says everything starts with the GSR. And I'll read it. First, remember that the base for our service structure rests on the dedication and ability of several thousand general service representatives, several hundred area committee members, and nearly 100 delegates. These are the direct agents of the AA groups. These are the indispensable linkage between our fellowship and its world service. These are the primary representatives of AA's group conscience. Without their support and activity, we could not operate permanently at all. If you go to the next page, if you're following me, on page 35 of the old hard copy, so it's no longer the current service manual, because some of you probably have that PDF, but I still have the peach covered book until I get a hard copy in my hand. I want to turn to Bill's leadership essay on page 36. And it starts off by saying, no society can function well without able leadership in all its levels, and AA can be no exception. So if someone has told you just elect anybody and they'll learn the job by its time to rotate, that's some of the worst information passed on in AA service. It doesn't mean that you were unqualified when you were elected. What that statement is supposed to mean is you now have it down to a science and it's time to rotate, which is the perfect time to rotate when you have it down to a science. But it doesn't mean you were unqualified to begin with. I'll lead that line again. No society can function well without able leadership in all its levels. Able. And then it goes to say, in AA, certainly no leader is faceless, and neither is any leader perfect. Fortunately, our society is blessed with any amount of real leadership. The active people of today and the potential leaders of tomorrow, as each new generation of able members swarms in. We have an abundance of men and women whose dedication, stability, vision, and special skills make them capable of dealing with every possible service assignment. We have only to seek these folks out and trust them to serve us. So it then goes a paragraph down to say an AA leader, therefore, is a man or a woman who can personally put principles, plans, and policies into such dedicated and effective action that the rest of us want to back him up and help with his job. When a leader power drives us badly, we rebel. But when he too meekly becomes an order taker and he exercises no judgment of his own, well, he really isn't a leader. Well, that's great, right? They tell you two extremes and to be somewhere in the middle. No one can be perfectly in the middle every day. It's impossible. But what I will tell you is this. There is no greater leadership challenge or school than Alcoholics Anonymous. That is my experience as an executive in the corporate world for many years with a lot of responsibility. And I will tell you that I joke about it all the time that a long time ago, I was a vice president that worked for this CEO. And he was one of the most principled men I know and ever worked for. And I worked in the job of solving problems. And sometimes he would send me to an office, sometimes around the world. And he'd say, Billy, that's going to be a really challenging meeting. They are not going to be happy you're there. They're not going to be happy the message that I'm sending. But we need to straighten some things out. And what I would tell you is I've left many of those meetings in my career and thought to myself, that was not as bad as the June Assembly of 1999, or that was not as bad as the Illinois State Convention meeting of 1997, or that was not as bad as the trustee compensation meeting. If you're in a position of leadership, you have to deal with people. And that is the greatest challenge in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of my favorite sayings in the business world is the person who sweeps the floor should choose the broom. And I stole that from a man that I read all his books. And it's because the downfall of leadership is ego. And as we all know, the alcoholic ego is quite an ego. And leaders tend to think that they know better, even though they're not sweeping the broom every day. They never ask the person who sweeps the broom, how does that look in AA? I'll give you some examples. If your local inner group is changing its website, don't have just trusted servants work on the committee. Get like 10 people not involved in service who will use that website. Let them be the test. They're the drivers who are going to use it. They're the people who are going to be using it at 10 o'clock at night or when they're traveling. Other examples I could give you. People who do treatment and corrections work, those dedicated volunteers, they know more about that work than we do. We don't need to be giving them rules and regulations and telling them. No, they're on the firing line every day. They're sweeping the floor every day. But in AA, the challenge is no matter what job we get elected to, we usually wanted another job. And so instead of focusing on our best, we can do our job, we're busy thinking about how someone else could be better at what they're doing. And really, it would be better if we left them alone. There's a couple other things I want to point out. Good leadership originates plans, policies, and ideas for improvement of our fellowship and its services. But in new and important matters, it will nevertheless consult widely. New and important matters, consult widely before taking decisions and actions. Good leadership will also remember that a fine plan or idea can come from anybody, anywhere. Consequently, good leadership will also often discard its own cherished plans for others that are better and will give credit to the source. It goes two lines down to talk about a politico. A politico is an individual who is forever trying to get people what they want. See, we talk a lot in AA about the bleeding beacon and the elder statesman. But here we talk about the politico, the person who wants to keep everybody happy. Keeping everybody happy in AA service is like keeping everybody happy in your family. People pleasing does so much damage. But it says a statesman is an individual who can carefully discriminate when and when not to do this. He recognizes that even large majorities, when badly disturbed or uninformed, can once in a while be dead wrong. When such an occasional situation arises and something very vital is at stake, it is always a duty of leadership, even when in a small minority, to take a stand against the storm, using its every ability of authority and persuasion to effect change. If you go down a couple, and I'm going to give a warning about that. If you are a principled person in service, who does not vote by sponsorship line and instead forms your own valid opinions. When we get to one of these situations, it is always a duty of leadership, even when in a small minority, to take a stand against the storm, using its every ability of authority and persuasion to affect the change. I just want to warn you, you're going to lose some friends forever in AA. They're not going to be happy with you. They're going to wonder why you have decided to take a stand. So my only advice is don't do it often. I've done it a couple of times with still lingering resentment. I don't even have to mention the manuscript litigation. I was the immediate past rotated chair of AA World Services. I was the last director who was in the room in 2009 when we made a decision about that manuscript. When the trustees decided to litigate, I decided that I had to be principled and let people know it was wrong. Now, I'll tell you, I lost some friends over that. Here's another thing it says. Another qualification for leadership is give and take, the ability to compromise cheerfully whenever a proper compromise can cause a situation to progress in what appears to be the right direction. Compromise comes hard to us all or nothing drunks. But to me, the most important part of the leadership essay is on page 38. When I became a director on the AA World Services Board, a past trustee called me and said, Billy, you're now going from being the critic to the criticized. And I want to read you what it says here, because to me, this is the gold of the leadership essay. Leadership is often called upon to face heavy and sometimes continued long criticism. This is an acid test. There are always the constructive critics, our friends indeed. And listen to this instruction. We ought never fail to give them a careful hearing. We should be willing to let them modify our opinions or change them completely. Often, too, we shall have to disagree and then stand fast without losing their friendship. And then listen to this next one. If that doesn't sound bad enough, what's the next paragraph say? Then there are those we like to call our destructive critics. They power drive. They're politickers. They make accusations. Maybe they are violent, malicious. They pitch gobs of rumor, gossip, and general scuttlebutt. Come on, alcoholics never do that. To gain their ends. All for the good of AA, of course. But in AA, we have at least learned that these folks, who may be a trifle sicker than the rest of us, need not really be destructive at all, depending very much on how we relate ourselves to them. And then listen to these instructions. These are the instructions to a destructive critic. These are the instructions to someone who is malicious, who picks gobs of rumors, makes accusations, general scuttlebutt. The instructions are this. To begin with, we ought to listen carefully to what they have to say. Sometimes they are telling the whole truth, at other times a little truth. More often, though, they are just rationalizing themselves into nonsense. If we are within range, the whole truth, the half truth, or no truth at all can prove equally unpleasant to us. That is why we have to listen so carefully. If they've got the whole truth or even a little truth, then we had better thank them and get on with our respective inventories, admitting we were wrong. If it is nonsense, we can ignore it, or we can lay all the cards on the table and try to persuade them. Failing this, we can be sorry they are too sick to listen, and we can try to forget the whole business. There are a few better means of self-survey and developing genuine patience than the workouts these usually well-meaning but erratic brother members afford us. This is always a large order, and we shall sometimes fail to make good on it ourselves, but we must keep trying. So what does that mean if you're an AA leader? It means that tough questions are your job. You know what's the most arrogant statement in all of Alcoholics Anonymous? Trust the process. If a well-meaning AA member asks you a question and your answer is trust the process, I don't know where that is in any AA literature. It's exactly the opposite of what I just read you in Concept 9. If anything, Concept 9 tells AA members regarding their leaders to trust but verify. Trust but verify is legitimate. Trust the process is arrogant and condescending. So let's talk about just the four qualities, and then I'll let Kerry take over. Flexibility, tolerance, vision, and responsibility. Let's talk about vision. I'll tell you the bad news about vision. Things happen slowly in AA. you might have the greatest improvement or something involved in service that anyone has ever had. Let me prepare you. 10 years after you rotate, you will read a newsletter where someone else is getting credit for your great idea. And I think that's as God has designed it, because we're not good people with credit and ego, and we're just not. But vision is important and difficult. But every true AA leader should be looking out to the future. We know we just blew it with technology. With technology, thank God for COVID-19. It's brought us into the early 21st century. But there were leaders who had vision about technology 20 or 30 years ago. And people accused them of wanting to go down the slippery slope. Technology would kill us, take away 12-step opportunities. You think any inmate, AA member, who's been able to go to a meeting on some kind of technology the last 2 years thinks it's a slippery slope, the end of AA? I doubt it. How about all the elderly members of AA who are not as active as they used to be, who are now on fire with AA again because technology gave them the ability to be active again? I'm not saying, I love in-person meetings. So vision, responsibility, tolerance, and flexibility. That's a tall order for AA members. I'll leave you with a little mathematic equation. Tolerance plus flexibility plus vision equals responsibility. Intolerance plus inflexibility plus lack of vision equals irresponsibility. And when you accept and you go down that upside down triangle and you want the fancy title, you're accepting all of this, the destructive critics and all. Thanks, Dee.
Thank you so much, Billy. And Carrie, come on in, honey, and jump in where you left off. I know you're having trouble.
I apologize for that, guys. It was pretty much done. I don't know where you, did you hear me start reading? I'm just going to finish that paragraph. That was kind of what I was ending with anyway. So I apologize. So in the middle of page 174 says the same stern thread applies to the group itself. Unless there's approximate conformity to AA's 12 traditions, the group too can deteriorate and die. So we of AA do obey spiritual principles. First, because we must, and ultimately because we love the kind of life such obedience brings. Great suffering and great love are AA's disciplinarians. We need no others. And I'll just comment real quick before we open it up for questions that the first time I heard that read in a meeting, conformity, obedience, like my middle finger almost went up, because I was absolutely a nonconformist and don't even say the word obedience around me. Don't you know what that means? However, having had a spiritual awakening as the 12 steps, as a result of the 12 steps, today I realize that I do need to conform to AA's principles and to the group conscience of not only my group, but AA as a whole, because I love the type of life such obedience brings. And it's so much easier when I don't have my claws in everything, trying to change AA to suit me. It's so much easier just allowing AA to change me and not trying to change AA. So with that, thank you for allowing me to finish. And I'm so grateful I was able to hear most of what Billy had to say.
Well, thank you both so much. And I really appreciate both of you, as I know everyone else here too, for self-sacrifice that you guys give and giving back to Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you, really. Thank you for your experience, both of you. Do you want a few moments to look at the chat, see if you have any questions, you Carrie, and let me ask you, Billy, if you have any yet. I don't see any in the chat.
I have some yet. Whenever you're ready.
Okay, go ahead then, pop on.
Okay, so the first question that I am seeing in the chat says, question, the steering committee, can you explain it? Is it only for large groups? So I would not have been able to answer this question 3 years ago. I would have probably put my opinion in about what I think of steering committees, because I believe in group conscience meetings. I believe in business meetings. I believe, you know, but I didn't really understand, I don't think fully, what a steering committee was until my group had to have one since the pandemic, actually. You know, when we went online, when we went virtual, and we were no longer meeting in the church, We meet 6 days a week. Okay. So our meetings were 6 days a week. Right now we're meeting 4 days a week, but our meetings were 6 days a week. And we didn't have any scripts for online. We didn't have anything that says, please mute your mic, nothing. Right. And so we were having stuff change every single day. We would fail miserably at a meeting. And then the next day go, okay, so let's change that. And the next day let's change that. And, you know, and then eventually it got to be once a week, we were having a steering committee meeting at the end of the week to discuss, because there's no way we would have been able to wait for the monthly business meeting to discuss all of those changes, because they were coming at us so fast at rapid succession. So what we decided to do, and you can find the definition of the steering committee on page, on the very bottom of page 23 in the AA group pamphlet. And it talks about a steering committee, and what it is and what it isn't. But my personal experience with a steering committee has been wonderful. I would have never guessed, but it doesn't replace our business meetings. Our group has business meetings once a month on the first Tuesday of every month, directly following the Tuesday meeting. And that's the way it's been for 35 years. However, now
in Language of the Heart, the question arose what the group conscience is on treatment of treasurers who abscond with dollars. I don't know if that's for me or Kerry. I believe it's, if it's for me, I believe it is a group conscience decision on what happens to people who abscond with AA money. But I don't believe the urban legend that the warranty tells us we can't report it to the police. I think the big book supersedes all other AA literature. I've searched in the section on step 9, where it says, for some amends, you may go to jail. I do not find where it says, except for if you steal money from AA. I don't see that there. I've looked and looked and looked. Now, I'm not saying a group might decide to just let it go. An area might decide to let it go. My only warning is that if you are a nonprofit organization, if you have become a nonprofit, and you are a committee or a convention or an inner group or a district or an area, you need to be familiar with your state's rules on nonprofit. And some states have strict rules if an officer of a nonprofit embezzles money. But I agree. It's a group conscience decision. I think I had another question. I thought we had no leaders but trusted servants. Nope, we have tons of leaders. Tons of leaders. We need leaders. Trusted servant is a leader. It's just the question, what kind of leader do you want to be? Somebody asked me, can I talk about sponsors as leaders? Sure. I think sometimes people don't realize the immense responsibility that comes with being a sponsor. I don't think sometimes people realize that dealing with a life and death situation. And then I also don't think sometimes the responsibility we have when we put certain things in sponsees' heads. They can't wait to go out and tell the rest of AA, AA as Billy sees it. That's not okay. We have to make sure that we are informing people. I always say this, and I get in trouble sometimes when I say it. If you're at an election assembly and the person standing for the position is given 2 minutes to say while they're qualified, if they mention who their service sponsor is, they're not qualified, period. End of sentence. If they are trying to get elected to a position based on someone else, they're not qualified. Now, let me go to my second rule. If you are debating an issue at an assembly, at a committee meeting, in a diner, if someone has to bring up somebody else's name, they're wrong. Period. End of sentence. If they can't refer to literature and our history and talk based on their own experience, it's not worth it. It's not worth it, because then you're not debating or even having a discussion with somebody in front of you. You're debating some kind of brand sponsor or whoever who's not even in the room. And sponsors should act more like leaders and let their sponsees know. Yeah, people can know who your sponsor is. You don't get to use them to some kind of advantage in an election or a debate or discussion. Just don't do that. I'm trying to see if I have another question, Dee.
She's back. I could try to throw it back to her. I think she's having to do it from her phone too tonight.
I'm sorry about this. I don't know what's going on.
I have one that I'm just going to read, and I'll be done.
Okay.
You talk about regarding sponsors as leaders, how it relates to the phrase, you can't say anything to keep someone sober, and you can't say anything to get them drunk. Well, that's a lie. I mean, that is a big, big, big lie. One of the biggest in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can say, or people say, some really foolish things. And if you're armed with the facts, you should be able, as the big book says, to win over someone's confidence, which means you can say something to them. Maybe you should read about Bill meeting Bob and how he said something help Dr. Bob stay sober. So that phrase drives me as crazy as any other. So go ahead, Carrie.
Okay, yeah, I'll just finish on the steering committee question. And then anybody else who sent me anything in the chat, just know that I can't see that anymore and I apologize. My home group has a steering committee compiled of elected trusted servants who elects them the body at the business meeting. So we don't elect ourselves, we don't appoint ourselves. The body at the business meeting elects trusted servants. So the body elects the treasurer, the body elects the GSR, the body elects the alternate GSR, the body elects the IGR, the body elects the secretaries, all that. So at that point, those elected trusted servants now meet outside of the business meeting, handle the stuff, nitpicky stuff, like the meetings and how to, are we going to use the hand raise feature or are we just going to call on people and all of that stuff. And so the body now, and I love the word steering committee because it kind of reminds me of steering a ship, right? The body gives the coordinates to the committee that's steering the ship. And the body gives the directions. And the body says, we want to arrive at point B. Take us there. Don't take us anywhere else. And then the steering committee gets together. And we talk about, what turns to make and where, if there's waves coming, what to do about those waves. But eventually we're trying to arrive at the location that the body has directed us to go. So if there's anything that needs to change in the group bylaws, if there's anything that needs to change that affects A as a whole or our inner group or our district or anything outside of just our meetings, steering committee needs to have that approved by the body. So we don't get to make up any decisions. We don't get to make up the coordinates. We just try to steer the boat between the business meetings in the direction that the body has given us permission to steer in. I hope that answers.
Thank you. And I don't have any questions yet, but I did ask for anybody to resend your question to Carrie if you haven't heard it. To me, if you haven't heard it answered yet, because when she falls off, she loses any questions that you would have sent to her, just for those of you that don't know. Billy, did you get anything else?
I'm looking right now.
Okay.
Sure. Let's see. Say the good service leader in our district is the PICPC member, and in my local town, in hospitals, schools, the library, police stations, doctors, and hotels, there's nothing at all, no flyers, no meeting lists. Library doesn't have a big book. No public notice boards have any information on AA. Do you bring it up at the district meeting, or would you have a quiet word and ask him about it first before bringing it up at the district? I always believe in a quiet word first. That's what I would do. That's the last one I have, Dee.
All right. Thank you so much, Carrie. Carrie, do you have anything else? Somebody's asking, what was the highlight on page 173? And I don't know which one of you had a highlight on page 173. I apologize. Are you got any other questions? Did we lose her again? See you. I don't hear you. I have to co-host her again. That's why she cannot. Here we go. Are you there?
Okay. Yes. Now I can mute. All right. Sorry, I can mute. Thank you. No, that's okay. So the first question that I had was, sorry, Dee, what page was that on of the steering committee? Is on the bottom of page 23 is where it starts. It says, why have a steering committee on the bottom of page 23 of the AA group pamphlet? The next question, Dee, that you just asked me was, what page was I reading? 170 on the bottom of page 174. on the lower half of the page, that's where it talks about approximate conformity. And then the first quote, my highlight that I read was in the middle of page 73 in the AA, in the 12 traditions and 12 steps book.
Great, thank you. And do you have any other questions, my dear, or is that it? Well, if you did, you wouldn't know, would you? Because you probably
sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. It is what it is. Technology, what we have with it. And Billy, any more for you? Are we good to close, you two?
Good.
All right. Thank you again, both of you. And congratulations in the